I don't do this as often as I should. But there are times that I find it important and necessary to do a recap of a quotation from Dr. William Donald Kelly in 1969, some 5 or 6 years after he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Kelly said, "Let us not be hypocrites. It is so easy to condemn our medical profession, and rightly so. Of all the people in the world who should understand physiology and ecology, they should. But they do not." Good evening. Welcome to... You know, you got to do the introduction, The Edge of Darkness, but that's not what we typically do on Wednesdays. It's interesting stuff. We deal with health on Wednesdays as a general rule, your good health. And today's the 25th of January. Time goeth on too quickly in some amazing respects. Americans, my friends, pay twice as much for their health care, and yet we get the worst care of any developed Western nation. I have learned that. And we've certainly talked about it a lot. I hope you tuned into yesterday's program to get my rather sarcastic and angry update to what's been going on with me. And it's all quite positive at this point in time, because I didn't quit. I didn't stop taking the crap that was being dished out to me by the medical community. And so while we discuss this cost of our health care, and we discuss the worst care of any developed Western nation, oh, and we're paying big time. We're paying bigger than anyone else in any nation in the world. While other countries guarantee treatment regardless of income, treatment in the U.S. depends on whether you can afford costly health insurance or have a job that provides it, or whether you may happen to be an illegal invader and is subject to the taxpayer paying for your health care. According to polls, nearly 70% of Americans support a Medicare for All scheme over the current health insurance system, and making health care affordable was the second highest priority of Americans in a 2022 poll. Well, you see, we begin to read that 15 million Americans will soon lose Medicaid benefits. Well, I think we talked a little bit about Medicaid yesterday, didn't we? Concerns about the cost of health care are likely to increase even further once Medicaid begins terminating benefits for an estimated 15 million Americans, which is expected to begin in April of this year. These are people who qualified for Medicaid and or Children's Health Insurance Program, known as CHIP, coverage during the pandemic emergency. But once the public health emergency ends, this coverage will be rescinded. And so are we really going to go back to letting 68,000 people die each year simply because they're too poor to live? That's the question that's been posed. And Joey campaigned on a public option for health care, but that promise is yet to come to fruition. Perhaps because he took more money from the health insurance industry than any previous president and did what with it? Oh, sent it to the Ukraine. Of course, former President Obama folded when it came to a public option after the industry lobbied hard to prevent it. And while so-called Obamacare promised to be an affordable option, health insurance prices and industry profits soared once the Affordable Care Act was enacted. And since people were financially penalized for not having insurance, insurance companies took advantage. They raised their prices across the board, even though we were promised that that would not happen. It's interesting how the government always puts the screws to us. But you see, the public option would allegedly allow Americans to purchase a government-backed Medicaid-like plan at a competitive price. The idea being that government would not seek to make a profit of the public option in the way private health insurers do. Well, I hate to say it, but private health insurers are a business. They do have a right to make a profit. I have no qualms with what my insurance company has done. They've been there for me strongly over this past year and a half, nearly a year and a half. My costs continue to decrease, with the exception of a few drugs that we're on. But you've got to understand how the industry functions. Because, you see, U.S. healthcare is basically nothing but a conglomerate of monopolies. Oh, there's many reasons for why U.S. healthcare is so exorbitantly expensive, but one of them is because it is a monopoly, or as Dr. Robert Pearl, former CEO of the Permanente Group, describes it, a conglomerate of monopolies. In a January 16th Forbes article, he writes these words. Pearl says, in any industry, market consolidation limits competition, choice, and access to goods and services, all of which drive up prices. But there's another often overlooked consequence. Market leaders that grow too powerful become complacent. And when that happens, innovation dies. Healthcare, you see, he continues, offers a prime example. De facto monopolies abound in almost every healthcare sector. Hospitals and health systems, drug and device manufacturers, doctors backed by private equity. And the result is that U.S. healthcare has become a conglomerate of monopolies. I might also add, my friends, that how much money comes out of healthcare to line the pockets of our elected official dumb? Think about that one. It's all for the elections, you know. Dr. Pearl continues by saying, for two decades, this intense concentration of power has inflicted harm on patients, communities, and the health of the nation. And for most of the 21st century, medical costs have risen faster than overall inflation. America's life expectancy and overall health has stagnated. The pace of innovation has slowed to a crawl. And let's not forget the cost of the meds, the drugs. I shared with you recently a new prescription that my heart doctor had given me. My wife went in to pick it up, was told it was $450 for a 30-day supply. But she was also told that it was not for heart-related issues, it was for diabetes or something. Well, she declined to pick it up, found out that it was for both diabetes and heart-related conditions. It took my doctor several months to finally get approved. We received certificates, all sorts of things, giving us discounted prices, the whole nine yards. The next time we were quoted a price on this stuff was $1,250 for the same prescription. And all of a sudden, I got a phone call one day from my pharmacist informing me that the drug was in and is affordable, blah, 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 blah. And because I waited until after the 1st of January to pick it up, the cost dropped to $140. How interesting. Dr. Pearl concludes by saying merged hospitals and powerful health systems have raised the price, lowered the quality, and decreased the convenience of American medicine, end quote. And yet, according to Pearl, 40 of our largest healthcare systems combined own 2,073 different hospitals. My friends, that's approximately one-third of all emergency and acute care facilities in the country. The top 10 healthcare systems combined own one-sixth of all hospitals and have an annual net revenue of $226.7 billion. As we teased you yesterday in my other commentary, it's all about the shekels. You see, while there are all sorts of antitrust and anti-competitive laws on the books, legal loopholes, intense lobbying continue to spur hospital consolidation. Intense lobbying, that's the part where our elected official dumb comes into this. But as a result of all this consolidating, hundreds of communities have just one option for inpatient care. And this means there's no competition in terms of pricing. No, so that way prices tend to go up. Well, the quality of care often declines since patients cannot complain and go elsewhere. But I've got to wonder, is there a better system possible? Is there something out there that could make a big difference? According to Pearl, healthcare could be far more affordable. Medical outcomes could be improved if only hospital system administrators were willing to embrace more innovative care delivery. For example, they could leverage economies of scale. You see, size equals cost savings, so when larger hospitals acquire smaller ones, they gain negotiating power. They could also eliminate redundancies, which could and should result in lower prices for medical care. But that's not happening. Instead, inefficiencies at both hospitals persist. Why? Because hospital administrators prefer to raise prices rather than undergo the painstaking process of becoming more efficient. Pearl then goes on to give the following example. He says, following M&A, which is a term for merger and acquisition, health systems continue to schedule orthopedic, cardiac, neurosurgical procedures across multiple low-volume hospitals. Wouldn't they be better off creating centers of excellence and doing all total joint replacements, heart surgeries, neurosurgical procedures in a single hospital, or placing each of the three specialties in a different hospital? Doing so would increase the case volumes for surgeons and operative teams in that specialty. They'd be augmenting their experience and expertise, leading to better outcomes for the patients. So what else? Could offer services 7 days a week. You know that a lot of hospitals cut back on their services on the weekends because staff prefer to have the weekends off. And that doesn't even count the staff members that have been booted out because they won't take the jab. Oh, that fight's still going on in this country. But as a result of cutting back on hospital hours, patients admitted on a Friday evening or a weekend end up spending, on average, one extra day in the hospital because procedures were postponed until Monday. And not only does this result in additional costs for the patient, it also places them at higher risk of hospital-acquired infection and medical errors. Another option, Pearl says, is they could offer at-home services. And during the pandemic, patients were frequently sent home with intravenous medication and monitoring devices when hospitals ran out of beds. A nurse would come check on them if or when needed. And according to Pearl, clinical outcomes were equivalent to and often better than the current inpatient care, and the costs were markedly less. But then you see, I would wonder, why would I want a nurse coming to my home who's been possibly infected or surrounded by a good number of people with COVID or whatever else is out there? That would be a little disconcerting, would it not? Look, with what we've shared with you thus far, hospitals could easily expand, however, on this approach with readily available technologies. For example, a team of clinicians in a central location could monitor hundreds of patients in their homes around the clock using biomonitoring devices, video streaming. Why not? Look at all the video streaming that's been taking place in the public school system for the last 3 years. My nearly 19-year-old granddaughter is now attending college. But they've gotten so used to having the classes at home through Zoom and through computerization that these are among the choices they're making. I am bothered by it. One needs to have interaction with a teacher and other students, other human beings. Interesting. While all of this is going on, prescriber drug ads increase costs, put patients at risk. My God, the continual ads for commercialization, advertising for drugs and meds, whatever you want to call them. Another thing could go a long way toward improving medical outcomes is banning drug ads, especially in the electronic health record, the so-called EHR systems. And yet 15% of electronic health record systems actually feature pharmaceutical marketing to doctors while they are entering your medical data. It's simple. Drug ads in electronic health record or EHR systems and patient portals drive up the cost and result in poor prescribing decisions that put patients at risk. Some EHRs are even subsidized by drug company partnerships. While 15% is a minority, it is still considerable when you consider that 80% of doctors have adopted the EHRs, with more adopting them each year, each day. And it has been recently reported by the American Medical Association. Research cited in the AMA board report shows that exposure to physician-directed advertising is associated with less effective, lower quality prescribing decisions, and that exposure to pharmaceutical company-provided information leads to higher prescribing frequency, higher costs. In one instance, Practice Fusion, a company Allscripts purchased in 2018, used an ad-supported revenue model. And after a federal investigation, Practice Fusion admitted to soliciting and receiving kickbacks from opioid manufacturer Purdue Pharma in exchange for clinical decision support, or CDS alerts, promoting unnecessary opioids at the point of prescribing in their EHR system. The Pain CDS and Practice Fusion's EHR displayed alerts more than 230 million times between 2016 and 2019. And those who received the alerts prescribed extended-release opioids at a higher rate than those who did not. And that activity by Practice Fusion demonstrates how the EHR can present opportunities for stakeholders to abuse the system. inappropriately influence physicians' decisions and put patients at risk. That according to the board report from the AMA. A report by CMI Medical Group also revealed the power EHR-based ads have to massively increase prescriptions for a given drug. Using its recommended EHR messaging strategy, CMA was able to increase prescriptions of a drug by 388%, while prescriptions for its competitor dropped by 36%. And furthermore, when the campaign was paused for a month, scripts dropped 13% compared to the previous month, and when the campaign resumed, scripts increased 23%. And so, of course, now we're dealing with AMA, the House of Delegates. They oppose EHR drug ads. You see, as a result of the AMA board's findings, the AMA House of Delegates, the legislative and policy-making body of the AMA, amended its policy. They now oppose direct-to-prescriber drug ads and EHRs. Medical reference software, e-prescribing software. The policy also opposes the preferential placement of brand name medications in e-prescription search results or listings. Instead, encourages e-prescribing and EHR companies to list generic medication names first. And that was one of the problems with this outrageously, this $1,200 prescription that I was given, which didn't wind up costing me that, is I want to know what other generic medications are out there. Oh, that's right. This stuff is a brand new medication. You know, you got to get the money to the drug company so they can get their costs recovered. Their costs recovered. It's up to them to pay for their costs with the legitimate profits made with the marketing of said product, if it's a worthwhile product. And I'm sure there's an awful lot of questions about some of that. I've got drugs that I've been prescribed to that eventually I was taken off of. One of my heart medicines early on was something called Brilanta. I am sitting in my drawer right now with probably 4 to 6 months worth of that particular drug. Fortunately, it was a very affordable drug. But I was removed from it. I no longer take it. I'm meeting with my doctor tomorrow morning, and I'm handing the prescription to him because he has patients who maybe don't have insurance, who have the issues that I was facing at that time, where Brilanta would be the proper prescription for some of them to be on. I'm giving him to my doctor, and he will provide them to patients who have need and can't afford it. Of course, I paid for them at an insurance cost, which could have ranged anywhere from $4 to $10, $12, something of that nature per prescription. There's no point in letting this stuff go to waste. Let's get it to somebody who can help. And that's what I'm doing tomorrow. But keep a number of things in mind. Drug ads in medical journals tend to compromise patient care. Considering the fact that drug ads and EHRs can entice doctors to make lethal drug decisions, maybe because of the amount of money they're being paid to prescribe it, in addition to driving up the cost by promoting brand name drugs, I believe they should be banned altogether. I mean, after all, doctors are already influenced by drug reps and drug ads in medical journals. I shared with you, my audience, quite some years ago, and I had a doctor up in the Scottsdale area. As a matter of fact, his office was about a block away from a coin company, a gold and silver company that I worked for at one time called Viking International Trading. It's where I met Robbie Noel. And we began a very long time relationship. And the doctor and I eventually got into some disagreements about things, and I came home one day and there was a registered letter from the doctor terminating our relationship. Basically, he was firing me as a patient because I would not do every damn thing he expected me to do. Now, I've got just enough knowledge and I ask enough questions, and some things aren't right and some things are right. Some things are just wrong. But that's okay. We moved on. And then that's where I met Dr. Shweta Jain, who was a marvelous, marvelous East Indian lady. But I had an appointment with that doctor, the one who eventually fired me early one morning. And I was the first patient of the day. And I got there. And within about 2 minutes, these two absolutely hot young babes walked in the office. Legs to die for. Short skirts. Long blonde hair. Somewhat low-cut blouses. I mean, for all I know, they could have been hookers. I didn't know. Maybe in a roundabout way they were. Because all of a sudden, I had to wait 45 minutes for my appointment. Because the doctor took the two babes in before my appointment. And of course, I'm sure they gave him a bunch of free samples. And, well, enough is enough. Do you know that in 2016 alone, and this goes back some years now, 6+ years, drug companies spent $637 million on 100,000 pages of print advertisements in medical journals that reach 90% of the doctors. Not the patients, the doctors. The very people are going to prescribe it. I mean, it's just kind of like the two hot babes that went in to see the doctor. How many free samples were they giving him? No, I'm talking about pharmaceuticals, drugs. I don't know. It could have been other stuff, too. What do I know? You see, for journals, drug ads are a great source of revenue, but that cash flow comes at a price. And that price is patient care, safety. As once noted in Pharmaceutical Advertising in Medical Journals, revisiting a long-standing relationship, an editorial in the Chest Journal stated thusly, that advertisements enable pharmaceutical manufacturers to sway prescribing practices in favor of the product being advertised, regardless of whether it's the most efficacious or cost-effective option for a patient. Although some physicians may not believe that they are influenced by advertising, studies indicate a return on investment between $3 and $5 for every dollar that a pharmaceutical company spends on journal advertising. Now, one example of how ads can steer doctors in the wrong direction is that of one Actar Gel, a repository corticotropin injection advertised in the Chest Journal in 2016. In March of that year, Chest editorial board member Mark Matursky wrote a letter to the editor questioning the evidence supporting its use. Not only did that formulation of corticotropin cost nearly $34,000 for a 5-milliliter vial, there was no reliable evidence that was any better than oral corticosteroids. that cost pennies per pill. And all of this despite being on the market for more than 50 years. Baterski also cited evidence showing that there were substantial financial ties between top prescribers of the drug and its manufacturer. And so three other physicians wrote a crest editorial in support of Baterski's letter, and the manufacturer subsequently withdrew the ad. No doubt they weren't happy about it, seeing how a one-page ad cost $6,400, which means that the ad paid for itself five times over if it resulted in a single prescription. So in a case like this, what responsibility does the journal have? Should they allow ads for ineffective drugs that cost tens of thousands of dollars more than proven ones? Should medical journals advertise drugs at all? This last paragraph. Should they allow ads for ineffective drugs that cost tens of thousands of dollars more than proven ones? These are the kind of questions I would continue to talk to my doctor about. What kind of kickbacks are they getting on the $1,400 prescription that I'm now only paying $140 for? Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. There's things that we all must understand. Half of drug ads in journals violate advertising guidelines, my friends. A study of 83 drug ads featured in medical journals found that nearly half of them failed to comply with one or more of the requirements in the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's prescription drug advertising guidelines, which makes this kind of advertising even more questionable. Well, if that's the case, then maybe the U.S. Food and Drug Administration should start getting a little bit more questionable about some of these things that are being approved for manufacture. You see, apparently drug makers are playing fast and loose with advertising rules when they're marketing to doctors. As noted by the authors, few physician-directed print pharmaceutical advertisements adhere to all FDA guidelines. Over half failed to quantify serious risks. The FDA could better protect public health by creating new, more objective advertisement guidelines, requiring transparent presentation of basic safety and efficacy information. See, my friends, without a doubt, the American healthcare system is beyond broken. Oh, sure, it excels when it comes to emergencies, but when it comes to treatment of chronic diseases, which is what gobbles up most of our healthcare spending, it's completely inept. But unfortunately, it's about to get worse. As detailed in The Redesign of Our Food System is a Plot for Control, President Joey has launched a Food is Medicine program that will allow doctors to prescribe food the way they prescribe drugs. How many doctors do you know out there that are not particularly healthy looking to begin with? Somewhat obese, pork filled, the whole nine yards. Well, while Joey's pushing this food as medicine program, at the same time, the globalist cabal is in the midst of redesigning the food system to eliminate natural whole foods, things like meat and dairy, and replace them with patented synthetics. And once such system is in place, there really is no hope for health. Because doctors will be pushing synthetic drugs and plastic foods. But what do you think Bill Gates is in the middle of? He's now one of the largest farm owner, land owner individuals in the world. He's bought up massive property in Arizona, massive property, I believe, up in Idaho and other places. And the entire goal is to grow plastic foods. That's what I call them, synthetic. And this is what we're supposed to grow up eating. My God, you go to places like Burger King and McDonald's right now, all these places, they're all serving plastic hamburgers. They're all made out of things that don't include meat. They have no protein, no vitamins in them, nothing. Of course, it doesn't help that we're probably feeding the animals junk to get them to grow and produce the fat a little bit faster. It's pretty profound, isn't it? So one of the ways that we can circumvent this manufacturing of the synthetic drugs and foods, we must focus on building alternative parallel healthcare systems that are outside the conventional paradigm. And there are some medical groups already doing this, which is great news. And on an individual level, you'd be wise to get as healthy as you possibly can now, just to avoid any unnecessary hospital encounters. Dr. Mercola's got an interesting article out there that would be well worth looking at. I will take a look at that a little bit later tonight or tomorrow, and we may publish it. We have this particular piece I share with you tonight is written by Dr. Mercola. Mercola has been bastardized, if you don't know it. He's a very wise man, puts out some tremendously great advice. And about a year and a half ago, all of a sudden, they started shutting him down. He got to the point that when he published an article, it could only remain on his website for 2 or 3 days before he had to get it out somewhere else to get it published and printed. He had to hide it. I will continue to share anything on Mercola that I can. What we've shared with you right now, today, is well worth consideration. The name of the article, which I finished publishing on drkelly.net about a half an hour prior to going on the air tonight. The title of the article is also the title of tonight's program, Healthcare, Monopoly of Monsters. And that is, my friends, what it's become. You consider my diatribe of yesterday, talking about the monster urologist that I had experienced, the monsters of ER doctors who paid no attention to what the real issues really were. This is what we're dealing with. Isn't it appalling? It should be. If it's not, then we can all expect a shorter lifespan. As for me, well, I'd just soon continue to have a somewhat longer lifespan, but God only knows. Got some great news, some notices from Dr. Southern up in Canada. He finally was able to listen to yesterday's show, so thanks for the mention. He says, you've been through hell and back. Damn glad you made it, and you did. And as we're sharing this article, some of the comments he's left, they got to pay for their FDA fees, FDA certification in the hundreds of millions for each new drug. It's a racket. He said, the pharma companies I hear use cheerleaders. They were probably working on their routines with your doctor. Oh, yeah, I'll bet they were. Then there's the free trips for your doctor to go down to the Caribbean to party. All expenses paid by the pharma companies. You never know next time you meet some of those good old girls on the doctor's office slip them your name card, sell them some gold. Then they can be golden girls. Amazing what we face in this issue. Michael, if you got a couple minutes, let's pull out about three minutes or so of our little break music. Little Kim, I need to dance. And I'll be back with some closing comments for tonight. Stay with us, folks. What I need. Dance with Kim Novak on a picnic. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about, then the hell with it. That's your problem. One of the pieces that I published earlier in the week, we're not going to share with you tonight, something I invite you to go take a look at yourself, is part of a 5-part series that began being written and published back in, I think, 2018 or 19, called The Cancer Within Modern Medicine. I published chapters 1 and 2 on the Dr. Kelly website quite some time ago. Chapter 3, for some unusual reason, I chose to publish on Federal Observer. And I did that because it tended to lean more toward the political than it did the medicinal. I finally got around to publishing part 4 the other night on drkelly.net called Manipulation of the Minds. The interesting thing is there's one paragraph. The opening paragraph of this article says so much about our medical community. And in many respects, it's quite a comment about that which we've just shared with you. And that paragraph says there is a cancer within what we know as what we know of as modern medicine, eating away at the very heart of its original design. Rather than saving and healing humanity, this cancer seeks to destroy us from within. And as we continue to dissect the cancer within, in this particular segment, this part four, we began to focus on the area of mind control. Those who have shaped the minds of the masses since the turn of the 20th century. It's quite powerful. The cancer within modern medicine, part four. Manipulation of the minds. It is well worth the read, my friends. Look, I have made this very clear over the years. As a rule, I am not here to entertain. It's not that I haven't done it upon occasion or attempted to, but it's not the basis for my purpose of being here. I continue to get things sent to me inviting me to go listen to someone's program or a particular program, or I don't have time for it, number one. Number two, I've made it very plain and clear, and this is nothing against a single broadcaster out there, no matter what network they're on. It doesn't matter. I don't wish to be influenced by what they talk about or what their knowledge levels are or what they think their knowledge levels are. I don't need it. I don't have time. I have more than enough to keep myself busy. Based upon the article I shared with you last night, the one that I wrote, with parts of my amazing journey working with the medical community, with my heart issues, etc., etc., my catheter issues, so-called urination and prostate issues. No, they didn't remove the prostate. The question has been raised. That journey I shared with you last night was a small part of my journey, taking place from September of this past year until very recently. I hope that you begin to realize that my voice is becoming stronger. I'm getting back to what I do, what I enjoy doing, which is sharing commentary with you, challenging you to think outside the box of what your doctor may tell you or your favorite drug company may tell you or your favorite food manufacturer may tell you, or your banker or your politician. It goes on and on and on. I don't have time for all of that. I challenge you to listen to meaningful commentary from broadcasters in general, whether it be me or others. Take action with some of this meaningful stuff that's being told and shared with you. Don't buy into the bullshit. Don't buy into the entertainment crapola. Don't buy into the anger, the aggravation of any particular broadcaster or a caller. Most callers aren't going to guide you into much of anything. They want to hear themselves talk. They want to hear themselves ramble. Then they want to go back and listen to the archives so they can hear themselves on the air. Geez, I hope they're peeing in their pants when they're doing that. Now, enough of that. In the last few minutes of this program tonight, I'm going to guide you to something else I finished publishing just moments before going on the air. It was something that was sent to me by a longtime friend, a woman who I met exactly once in my life. I knew of her, but I still only met her once. Her name was Cynthia Bergner. It still is. She's still alive. I just received this yesterday. And I chose to publish it because it's common sense stuff. It deals with your health, your family, your choices. It's called Spike Protein Detox. Cleaning your system out. These are some proven suggestions and considerations for your good health. And there's a series of things that are recommended with brief, simple descriptions. Magnesium plays many crucial roles in our body, such as supporting muscle and nerve function, energy production. That's one of the group of suggestions that have come to us. Cynthia, by the way, used to work for the government. As a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, she worked for the CIA. She's no friend of what the government has become or what they were throughout most of her life. There's some other things that is talked about in this list, which blocks damage to our DNA. Provides protective antioxidant effects, strengthens our organs, including our brain, dissolves mucus, improves breathing and respiratory problems. Hey, that's one I ought to take a look at. Although in all those circumstances, I'm improving in all those areas anyway. A product called, if I can pronounce it, glutathione. I'm sure it's not pronounced right. The body's most powerful antioxidant and counteracts the harmful effects of graphene oxide. Human bodies produce glutathione naturally, but over as humans age and absorbs toxins, the production of it slows. When you get sick, the level of this stuff can drop. Selenium. Something else, a trace element that is naturally present in many foods available in a dietary supplement. Me, personally, I'd rather eat it in the food. There's other suggestions in here. Quercetin. Vitamin D, C, A. Promotes immune cell proliferation. Stimulates antimicrobial peptides. Immune cell proliferation. Enhances your mucosal integrity. It's an antioxidant. It protects healthy cells. Activates immune cells. Antiviral. Coordinates cellular immune response. Zinc. Essential for binding capacity. Optimizing lethality of immune cells. Promotes antiviral enzyme. Blocking viral replication. Another product called zeolite. And then there's pine needle tea, fennel C, other things, dandelion root, black cumin seed oil. Go take a look at the article. There for your benefit, not mine. Spike Protein Detox. Thank you for being with me tonight. I hope it's been beneficial to each and every one of you. We'll be back tomorrow night with another installment of The Edge of Darkness. And with glass lifted on high, I say, to health with you. Good night.
I'm with you once more under the stars. And down by the shore, an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying. When they begin the beginning, to live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. Divine, what rapture serene, till clouds clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. Oh yes, let them begin to begin, make them bless, till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you, and we suddenly know heaven we're in when they begin the beginning, when they begin the beginning.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the Internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.